Good morning.
Good morning.
It's so very pleasant to be here with you. And I left my keys out of my car this morning. And for the first couple of periods, while everyone else was here sitting inside, I found a piece of grass in the shade outside to sit down on. It was very pleasant. Perhaps I should lock my keys in the car more frequently when I come to Bolinas. When life hands you lemons, you sit in the sunshine. It's been 2 months since we've gathered here. Last month we had a sesshin at Green Gulch, and so we didn't have a monthly sitting here in Bolinas. So some of you made the sesshin, or at least a portion of it. Some of you I haven't seen for a few months, and I'm glad to see you again. As we sit here this morning, our president is doing everything in his power to launch an airstrike on targets in Syria. And that phrase targets, that word targets, came to mind. When I was a teenager, I practiced the sport of archery. I practiced target archery, which is different from hunting archery. In target archery, you don't shoot at living beings, you shoot at targets. You know, the thing with the bullseye kind of thing. And so what constitutes targets in Syria? Military installations, equipment, and personnel, maybe. Not persons, personnel. So, depending on how you dress, you may either be a person or a target. And so forgive me for the somberness of this, but it's part of our moment. And our question in practice is how to live in this world, how to walk this earth, not some other world, not some other earth. And so it behooves us to feel sorrow when sorrow is appropriate, feel confusion, grief, when those things arise, feel anger when it arises. I refrain from using the word appropriate or inappropriate when it comes to anger. Anger just is. What we do with it may be interpreted as appropriate or inappropriate, but anger arising in and of itself happens. How to live in this world with its unspeakable joys of sunlight on an early September morning and its searing confusion and pain. So I've been spending a lot of time contemplating a teaching of Master Linji. One of the teachings he's most famous for. I was going to ask you for recording this. Excuse me. How interesting that I'm concerned about recording this talk when I'm about to give a certain teaching in Linji's. He said, there's a true person of no rank. A true person of no rank going in and out of your sense gates. Those of you who have not seen him yet, look, look. And so a monk comes up to him, and we don't have a video recording of what actually transpires, so some of us, when we talk about it, have to speculate. I speculate that a sincere, earnest monk comes up to him and asks the question, well, what is this true person of no rank? Master Linji didn't go into a whole lot of detail, left it kind of vague. And so a sincere monk comes up and asks, what is this true person of no rank? And so how does Linji respond to this sincere question? He grabs the monk by the lapels of his robes and shakes him. Speak! Speak! And the monk is speechless, as I would be, you know, dumbstruck. And so then Linji kind of pushes him away and says, this true person of no rank, what a worthless, useless piece of crap he is. So, for, you know, I've been prompted to reflect on this teaching, a recent event in my life that I will mention probably. Maybe, oh, please come. That's, oh, one. Where's my tea? There's Pam standing so patiently waiting for me to ask for my tea. Thank So, that phrase, that true person of no rank, what a useless piece of crap he is. Now, my opinion is that a too hasty reading of that phrase is Linji expressing disdain towards the monk. Thinking, oh, you couldn't speak. You're a worthless monk. You're a useless monk. I think, however, he's saying something about the true person of no rank itself. Yourself, ourself. I had a conversation with a student this morning talking about homelessness. And there's so many resources, so many service providers. There's HUD funding programs. There's study sessions. So much focus on the issue of homelessness, the crisis and the shame of homelessness in our nation, you'd think we'd be able to solve it. And yet, when we're in the midst of it trying to do the work to solve it and seeing the depth of the issue and the plethora of causes and conditions, to untangle the knot of homelessness seems intractable, impossible. And I was having a conversation with another student last night at Starbucks, wonderful place for Dokusan Starbucks. We can be talking to each other and hearing Van Morrison sing the blues at the same time. And so when we're talking about current situation with Syria, and he was saying how he used to want to be on the right side. He used to want to figure out what is the right side and study and struggle to figure out what is the right side. And he's finding it less compelling to want to do that. Looking at this situation, you know. Our president has said that, you know, when it comes to gassing civilians, your own civilian population, that line must be drawn. That cannot be tolerated. A response is absolutely necessary. That sounds compelling from that vantage point. How can we not respond when we know that men, women, and children are gasping and suffocating, struggling to breathe? I heard a perspective from either a congressman or a senator who said that the question we need to ask is, if we were to execute a military strike on Syria, would the situation in Syria be better or worse? That's the only reasonable question to ask, and there's no way that he can conceive of it being better if we send weapons of destruction successfully onto those targets, which may actually have flesh and blood. He didn't say that part, that's my own commentary. And when I hear that, that's a very compelling thing. How to live in this world. We want to find the right place to stand. But from the perspective of Dharma, it's not about finding the right place to stand. The true person is pretty useless when it comes to figuring out the right place to stand. We're a practitioner of the way. Our dwelling place is all living beings. That's our true home. Given that, the question of right and wrong becomes irrelevant. On some deep fundamental level, we lose our seat if we try to figure out the right response.
What did you say right before that? For a person of the way?
Questions of right and wrong.
Right before that.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
To whom?
For a person of the way, our true home, our true dwelling, is all living things.
Yes.
That's our true home. And from that perspective, right and wrong, I use the word irrelevant, but from that perspective, we feel useless trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong. Mm-hmm. What does this true person of no rank feel like? What does this true person of no rank what is their ground? And I have a library here, I have to find the right book at the I have to like look on the bookshelf and find the spine that is this is from the Tao Te Ching, and remember my proposal this morning. In Master Lin Ji's story, he makes that statement, this true person of no rank, what a useless piece of crap he is, or she is. My proposal is that he's trying to illuminate the true person of no rank by calling the true person of no rank a useless piece of crap. He's not scolding the monk for not answering the question. He's explicating something about the true person of no rank. Now, this is from Lao Tzu, the Tao Te Ching. Now, and I also said that our true home is all living things. That's our dwelling place. And living there, trying to determine what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's bad, is not a possible endeavor. So here's what Lao Tzu has to say. Is there a difference between yes and no? Is there a difference between good and evil? Must I fear what others fear? What nonsense. Other people are contented, enjoying the sacrificial feast of the ox. In spring, some go to the park and climb the terrace, but I alone am drifting, not knowing where I am. Like a newborn babe, before it learns to smile, I am alone, without a place to go. Others have more than they need, I alone have nothing. I am a fool. Oh yes, I am confused. Others are clear and bright, but I alone am dim and weak. Others are sharp and clever, but I alone am dull and stupid. Oh, I drift like the waves of the sea, without direction, like the restless wind. Everyone else is busy, but I alone am aimless and without desire. I am different. I am nourished by the Great Mother.
Say that again to us.
I am different. I am nourished by the Great Mother. And so Lao Tzu here is saying, if I may be so bold as to tell you what he's saying, that living at the source is lonely. Living at the source makes one feel useless in a certain sense, confused in a certain sense, not knowing, not able to be clever and penetrating and sharp and discerning about certain things in certain realms. It's a disorder. So the effort to be true to our actual situation involves willingness to be disoriented, of not really knowing what the right thing to do is, to feel what it feels like, to struggle with that. To live on the margins, to be faithful to the way is to live on the margins. Thomas Merton, a Trappist monk and lover of spiritual truths of all traditions, who he schlepped over to visit His Holiness the Dalai Lama. He was friends with Thich Nhat Hanh. And he was at a conference in Bangkok, a monastic conference, East-West monastic conference, and he made a statement that he asked the question rhetorically, are monks and nuns relevant? He said, no. He said, they have something akin to hippies who choose deliberately to be irrelevant in order to deepen fundamental human experience. So this is something about the true person of no rank. It's worthless. It's irrelevant. It's humbling. But there's a sense of being in that confusion, in that not knowing, in that sense of powerlessness, there's a sense of intimacy with the mystery, with that which we can't actually get a hold of, but we can dwell close to nonetheless. A lot of it has to do with selflessness. And when I say selflessness, I don't mean some realization of no self, some insights, penetrating insight through meditation of shunya. It's not that. There may be nothing wrong with that, but that could be something that one endeavors to hang one's hat on. I remember, and so the true person of no rank, how to actually honor and harmonize one's effort with that is very, very important. Thinking about this topic and not knowing how I was going to talk about it, my mind flashed back to my first practice period. Mel Weitzman was the abbot still, leading the practice period. And some Tongariro students, first-time students at the monastery, had shaved their heads. And they were getting flack about having shaved their heads from some of the priests. Said, no, it really doesn't feel quite right to shave your head if you're not a priest. And Roberto, I remember seeing Roberto, I got a big image of Roberto's person in front of me. He actually asked that question at a class in the stone dining room with Mel. And he said that when he started practicing with Suzuki Roshi, everybody was shaving their heads. Just about everybody was shaving their heads. And he said that for him, shaving one's head is a sign that you want to practice as a monk. That was his response. And he didn't say it's good, it's bad. It says, well, it kind of shows your earnestness. And so, wanting to be a person of rank is insidious and subtle. Wanting to determine good from bad is understandable. Wanting to be a person of rank is understandable. And I would advocate that when we see people desperately seeking to figure out what's right and what's wrong, that we not judge them harshly. And when we see somebody reaching out for the next level of status, oh, when am I going to be asked to be Shiso? when will I get Dharma transmission? That we'll see these things in others. And if we're earnestly seeking the true person no rank, we're going to see them in ourselves. And that's good. So when that happens, not to be harsh, not to be self-deprecating or judgmental, but to understand that it's driven by fear. Hold it on for dear life because you know it's not going to last, and you don't want to know it's going to last. So how do you keep your mind away from the fact that everything is changing and you're going to die? See the fear driving greed, hate, and delusion. If you just see greed, hate, and delusion, you may want to judge. You may want to separate. You may not want to live in that living being. But if you can see the fear, the trembling heart driving the greed and the hate, the delusion, you won't have to try. You'll just automatically flow into that being. So have compassion on the person who wants rank, who's seeking rank, power, status, righteousness. So what prompted me to think of this koan, of the true person of no rank, is something that happened a while ago in my work. I was in a meeting where a colleague and I were basically terminating a volunteer position. A person who had a volunteer position. Oh, we had a target. Yeah, we'd acquired a target. Oh, gosh. And in the course of talking to him, my colleague made a statement trying to help him feel good about the change, or okay, or kind of like to ease his pain to some extent. Made the statement that, because, you know, this Bill, he's a good friend, as well as a coworker. And he was the student I was talking to last night, actually, so the friendship is as strong as ever. And he's strong enough as a person that he didn't need so much coddling, but she was basically trying to coddle him a little bit. He's got a lot of passion for community organizing, and she made a statement that when you're in your element, when you're doing, you know, we basically don't have a role for what you want to do right now. You can't expand mission to include the kind of work you're wanting to do with people. And you're not willing or able to do any of the positions that we do have. And so it's a mutually understood thing that, you know, it's your volunteer position needed to end. So anyway, to cut to the chase, the statement that she made is that when you're doing the thing you love to do, you are a force to be reckoned with. You are a force to be reckoned with. And for some reason, those words stayed ringing in my head, a force to be reckoned with. And then it hit me that, you know, 3.5 years ago or so, I was asked by the founder of the organization to take over his job as mission director. And that since then, part of my heart, with part of my heart, I have been trying to learn how to be a force to be reckoned with. How to go into city meetings, community meetings, city council, and be a force to be reckoned with. To find the skills to not consciously intimidate others, but to play the game. To play the game well enough to where I wouldn't be intimidated or manipulated. And upon further search, I felt that, and I was consciously trying to learn how to do that, you know, how to actually, you know, like there's that book Power, the 48 Laws of Power. I thought, maybe I should study that book, you know. And and I feel embarrassed thinking back on it, but my mind was going there. How do I actually acquire the skills to play this game these people play? And even the phrase "these people," instead of like, I'm not living in those beings when I think that way or speak that way. Very interesting. And when I looked at it more carefully, I said, well, part of it is I felt I had responsibility. You know, I've got this position of mission director. People are counting on me to represent the organization well and the needs of our guests well. So I need to have the power to do so. But then I also recognize that from my childhood through my early adulthood, I had incredibly low self-image, low self-esteem. And there was this little guy inside of me saying, hey, if I could learn to do this well, maybe I'll feel better about myself. And that wound would be gone. And so I think I actually fell into trying to become a force to be reckoned with for those two reasons. But I was doing that, and I was really distanced from my heart. And then Master Linji's words. Then Master Linji's words came to me. There is a true person of no rank flowing in and out of your sense gates. Look. There's freedom there. It comes at a price. The price is selflessness, and selflessness is not some grand realization, or maybe there is some grand realization of emptiness. I don't know. I haven't been there yet. But the selflessness I speak of now is another thing that Mel says. He says that occasionally he hears Suzuki Roshi say something like, you folks don't know how selfish you are. And at first he taught, Suzuki Roshi was saying, you folks don't know how selfless you are. You haven't realized your anatta yet. You haven't realized your lack of an inherent self yet. But no, you don't realize how selfish you are. And then I read one of the lectures where he says, the reason you have difficulty is you're practicing only for yourselves. You don't see anything. And the juxtaposition of practicing only for yourself and not being able to see, I found so intriguing. So it's that kind of work. And the selflessness that I feel, if you manufacture some kind of selfless being, that's big ego. But to see, oh, I have been trying to be a force to be reckoned with, and feel that, seeing it honestly, seeing the desire for being Shiso nakedly, honestly. Oh, I would like to have that rank. The one who can see that can be free of it. So to be, you know, to be very rigorously honest with your humanity, you can't, it is the path of selflessness. It's not like denying your humanness, denying ambition. It's like seeing it clearly as a way to pivot to the Great Mother, as a way to turn back towards the Great Mother, towards the Source, towards your true home. We share desire with all beings. We share ambition with all beings. We share the prison of suffering with all beings. That can be a road home. So selflessness is very intimate with selfishness. And when you practice that way, you feel foolish. You feel confused. You feel dim and weak. And others, they got it together because, you know, they're in their persona and they're doing their game solidly. But since you're seeing it, and since you're studying it, and since you're being spun by it, you can feel disoriented. That in that very disorientation, we're close, we're intimate. We have some measure, to the degree that we're faithful, we have some measure of freedom in the midst of all of that. Any comments, questions, refutations? Martha.
How long has it been that you've been here in Bolinas?
In Bolinas, a couple years maybe? A
couple years, yeah.
Yeah, well, in the California streets, it's been about five.
Right,
or six,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I just am so glad I was able to come to the lecture because I haven't been able to, I don't think, since you've been here. I came in a few times and sat a little bit. And it's really good to hear you. Thank you. What you said just made me think of so many things. And one of them is that as far as like getting experience so you can be forced to be reckoned with in city council meetings and applying for grants. You know, it's like get a mentor. Get someone who's been doing it for years, I would say. Because I have a hard time with like public speaking. I used to like start to vomit if I had to speak in front of people. You know, I went to a poetry reading once and actually threw up on the way to the poetry reading, and it was only five people in the audience and they were waiting to read their own poems. Experience, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Much more experience now.
Well, I won't be averse to accumulating experience.
Yeah.
But I want to approach it differently. There's a quote by Gandhi that I think bears on the person of no rank. I want to try to apply effort that way. And the quote from Gandhi is, "There comes a time when a man," he uses the term man, you know, "becomes irresistible. His actions are all-encompassing in their effect. And that time comes when he has reduced himself to nothing."
Right, when you get out of your own way. The other thing is, exactly. I think of Barack Obama with this incredible moral decision about bombing Syria, and him saying right or wrong, and so many people are saying, no, violence is never. Use diplomacy, use everything but violence. How is it ever right to kill another human being? But he does have to think about what's right and wrong. A lot of people are thinking about it right now. And if we hadn't stopped Hitler, where would we be? I don't know. Thank you.
I'm impressed with the fact, with what I see, you know, what I see is we get told a lot of stories and people believe them. There's no evidence backing up the, anyway, so I just think that is one of my places of inquiry is, well, what's the real story here? You know, what's the history? What's really going on? And it's so interesting that it's just such a big theater. With all these different pieces going on, and most of it's baloney. And you know, it's what do you call that? Illusion. And we love it. I just I'm so surprised at.
I'm not sure if we love it so much as we desperately think we need it.
Yeah.
We need to have an orienting story. We think we need to know what the truth is, where our ground is. Groundlessness is not very attractive, generally speaking. You know, so I think that, once again, I think more than pleasure, it's fear.
Well, I really appreciate this, the talk this morning, because well, it helped me.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my drama.
Thank you.
So on totally different matters, I really appreciated your talk because often I feel completely foolish. And I, like I just did this morning with you, which you totally forgot because you know me, but some people would be pretty offended when you came this morning and you said about your car keys and the thing. It's actually quite awful, and I know. But I say, oh, it's funny. My words. I have such a sometimes not so skillful speech, and then people think I'm dumb, really. And so I really could hear what you were saying. I don't know. Well, that's for me.
So, I too thank you for this morning. I was coming today to this sitting with the question of how to hold Barack Obama. Because yesterday, I'm not proud of this, but yesterday I was talking to someone. And in my talk about it, because it, this is such a driven thing, and I think I know what's right in this situation, right? And I called him a bastard yesterday in my talk. And I don't even use that word, but I said that. And and I immediately regretted talking like that about him, you know. And because I know that's not helpful, separating like that and vilifying really anyone. I know that's not helpful. So to really see the need for power and whatever is motivating all of this, and to be seen as a leader, the person with power, and hold that in compassion. How sad, really, how sad that is, you know, for him and for all of us, really. Yes, so thank you. I'll work on this. My attitude.
Selfishness and selflessness are so intimate. And then seeing a mental state of clinging is like, you know, seeing it so clearly is right there is freedom from it. So be very gentle.
Yeah.
And gentle and I don't want to quite say eager to explore klesha, mental affliction, but when we, you know, like Suzuki Roshi says, when you see how the mental weeds turn into nourishment, your practice will make amazing progress, you will feel the progress. He actually holds out a cookie. He usually says, no gaining idea. But when he says, studying afflictions, studying weeds for mental nourishment, he actually holds out some enticement. You know, you will see the progress, you'll feel the progress. So that's, you know, seeing selfishness is so intimate with being practicing selflessness. And so, you know, be gentle and accepting, and be wary of deprecation and self-blame and recriminations. And be grateful for the weeds in your practice. They'll nourish it. Although it is a little confusing.
It helps for me just the parameter of enthusiasm, you know, What's another word for enthusiasm? Vigor or curiosity and just, enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Oh, that's on the okay list.
Yeah. Yeah. Great realization of delusion, and you become what? A member of the Mickey Mouse Club. Okay, shall we do the closing chant? Page 4.
May our intention meekly extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Shu Jo Mu Hen Se Ran Do Bon Ho Mu Jin Se Ran Dan Om Ryo Se Ran Gaku Gusu Do Mu Jo Se Ran Jo. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.